You're listening to the Do Gooders podcast. It's not polite to talk politics. I'm sure you've heard the sentiment, especially in any kind of mixed crowd where people might disagree on the issue at hand. We live, worship, and work in diverse communities, but with politics becoming so tribal in nature, many of us simply avoid the subject. And that does a disservice to us all. Yet we can get comfortable with being uncomfortable and do it in a grace-filled way, according to Beth Silvers, co-author of I Think You're Wrong, But I'm Listening, A Guide to Grace-Filled Political Conversations. She and Sarah Stewart Holland also co-host the Pantsuit Politics podcast. As working moms from opposite ends of the political spectrum, they regularly sit down to talk politics together. Beth, a conservative life and business coach, spent 11 years as an attorney and then an HR executive before opening her own business. Named one of Cincinnati's 40 Under 40 business leaders, and as one of Ohio's most powerful and influential women, Beth regularly speaks to organizations about hard conversations. She asks us to hear each other's thoughts, to test our own beliefs against each other's philosophies, and to better appreciate our own core beliefs by having to articulate and challenge those beliefs. As Beth says, politics is all about how we live in community with each other. And if we engage in conversation with a goal not to persuade, but to be open to personal growth, we are all better off. So allow me to introduce to you today, Beth Silvers.
You're listening to the Do Gooders podcast, a show from the Salvation Army's Caring Magazine, where we firmly believe that good starts with you. We get it. Life is busy, and we know you want to do good, but squeezing another thing into the to-do list is hard. Idea organizer, truth seeker, and good infuser Kristen Thiem will introduce you to people just like you who are doing good right where they are, so you can be inspired to make your world a better, brighter place. Listen in on honest conversations for actions you can take to do good today. Here's your host, Caring Magazine editor, Kristen Thiem.
Caring Magazine is a publication of the Salvation Army, dedicated to helping you do good right where you are. Stay informed and join in. Head to caringmagazine.org and sign up for the free weekly Do Good Digest email newsletter. That's caringmagazine.org.
Beth, thank you so much for doing this interview and being on the Do Gooders podcast today.
Oh, thank you for having me. I love the Salvation Army and just so appreciate the opportunity to spend some time with you.
So fun. So this is a different side for you because you actually co-host a podcast and you've also co-authored a book with Sarah Stewart Holland. You both are working moms, but you come from different ends of the political spectrum. So can you share a little bit about how you became connected and more about the work that you do together?
Well, Sarah and I met in college. We were actually sorority sisters. We didn't find ourselves super close friends in college, but we were in the same sorority. We had some classes together. We knew each other and cared about each other, but we went separate ways after college. We both went to law school, Sarah in Washington, D.C., and I stayed in Kentucky. Eventually, she moved back to Kentucky and had a blog, and her blog was great. It was like natural childbirth followed by a post about Syria. And I started reaching out to her to ask if she would like some guest posts. And we just noticed that we had a really complementary perspective. And so Sarah suggests that we try a podcast. And we always tell people, like, we're not best friends. We were really just reconnected through Facebook and then started having this dialogue and wanted more of that dialogue. We were able to have a different kind of conversation than we could find elsewhere. And so she schooled me on podcasting, which I knew nothing about at the time. We had not been in the same room together for 13 years, but we just sat down and started recording from closets in our homes with our husband's help on the technical side, and Pantsuit Politics was born. And so we have for 3 years now been talking, and we try to show up and talk as ourselves about the issues of the day. We do a lot of research to try to make sure we know what we're talking about. And even though I tend to be more conservative and Sarah tends to be more liberal, we find so much overlap and so much value in hearing from each other.
That's so neat. So you really came together over this shared love of conversation then.
We really did. And just the process of kind of bumping up against each other and thinking, oh, here's where I might be missing something really important, or here's a test of my opinion and what it's based on. And so kind of all the things people hate about talking politics, brought us together, and we have found them to be really enjoyable.
That's really neat. So that brings me to the discussion here that we're having today. We live in diverse communities where we live, where we worship, where we work. All of us have different beliefs and opinions across the spectrum. Why do you think so many people tend to think of politics as black and white, as us and them?
I think it's easiest. You know, politics is becoming even more complicated as our government gets bigger and the world shrinks through technology. We have access to so much information. The political parties have always existed to provide us with a little bit of shorthand. Like, we understand that ordinary citizens can't read every word of a treaty to make a decision about whether it's good for our country. But I think the explosion of access to information, which should be democratizing in a way, has pushed us even more into camps where we just have to decide, I'm on this team. I cannot handle this overload of information. So I'm just going to hang with this team and whatever they say is going to work for me. And I think the political parties have gained access to a lot of tools, especially from the corporate world, where they've figured out, hey, that works pretty well for us. Maybe we should keep pushing people into these teams. And then the way information is curated online does the same thing. And it's just become a really circular problem.
Right. And it's become so much so that we, in a lot of senses, just avoid the subject altogether. It's just understood that we don't talk politics when we're with a group of people. So why do you think it's so hard to talk about politics? And then as an extension to that, what disservice does that do to our understanding of issues out there?
I think we are harmed by our unwillingness to talk politics on many levels. The first one is just that we don't know how to do it anymore. And it's, I don't know that it's really true that we don't talk politics. It's just that we don't talk politics with people who disagree with us. Right. So the people who are really interested in politics have so many places to go where they know they're just going to be validated in their own kind of righteousness. I can get together with these people. We can talk about how misinformed or poorly intentioned the other side is, right? But we don't actually sit and try to have that engagement across the aisle. And I understand why. It's uncomfortable. And when we are approaching it in this team mindset, it's miserable. You know, you come into a conversation and you don't have a conversation, you have a debate. And that's what all of the media models for us too. You know, every time you turn on a television show about news and politics, what you get is really a debate format. And that's not what most of us want to do with our time. The consequence of that, though, is that I think we get more and more distanced from each other and from the issues and really from just good conflict resolution skills. My favorite thing people tell us about our book is that even if you don't care about politics very much, which we hope we convince you to care a little more in the process of reading, but even if you don't, these are just life skills. We need to be able to talk with each other about hard things where we walk into the conversation with some disagreement and maybe we leave. You know, compromise is not always available when politics are in life, and we still need to be able to work together in community. And so that's why we really start in our book by saying, what we need is more conversation about politics, not less. We just need different leaders in that conversation.
Right. And so that book, it's titled, I Think You're Wrong, But I'm Listening, A Guide to Grace-Filled Political Conversations. What did you both set out to do with that book? What do you hope people gain from it?
For us, the book was an opportunity to reflect on how we conduct our podcast. What is it about sitting down together twice a week that has made us enjoy something that most people find just unthinkable? And so we put together 10 principles that we think generate what we call a grace-filled political conversation. And by grace, we really mean a conversation where both people leave the conversation feeling that their dignity is intact. They were not attacked. They were not undermined. They were not made to feel unsafe in any way. They were respected even where the disagreement became most stark. And so we guide people through a process. We tell people this book is not like how to make your stubborn uncle agree with you. This book is about changing yourself and the way you approach these conversations so that you can engage with others in a way that helps you grow. And that's really the point for both of us. We keep coming back to talk to each other because we find so much personal growth in it. I'm a better person because of my conversations with Sarah, and we want to spread that to other people.
Absolutely.
Hey, do-gooder. Your voice, your story matters. Want to know more? Get the free Find Your Story email course at caringmagazine.org. That's caringmagazine.org to find your story today.
In the book, one of the experiments that you mentioned caught my eye. It was a 1968 experiment by an elementary teacher about the out-group effect that she found. Can you share a little bit more about that?
Yeah, this study showed the effect of what you were talking about just a second ago. When we categorize ourselves, even by the most arbitrary measure, the study referenced eye color, for example, and when we tell a group of even children, hey, this is the in-group, the brown eyes, and the out-group is the green eyes, you can start to see our willingness to treat the out-group poorly. From the second of the categorization, we are just wired as human beings to classify things, and that's a survival instinct. But when we're not trying to, you know, escape a lion or make sure we have enough food to eat this evening, that survival instinct really harms us. And that, again, has created this environment of, like, team sports around politics. We've decided this is my in-group and my out-group. And science tells us that once we make that categorization, we aren't thinking rationally anymore. We are evolutionarily going to treat the out-group poorly and excuse a lot of things in the in-group that are inexcusable.
It's really fascinating. But you write that it's possible to have a calm and grace-filled conversation with family and friends to engage people about issues. And you lay out two parts in the book, start with you and turn your eyes outward. So where do we start in looking at ourselves?
Well, we have to look at our own capacity for difficult conversations and commit to being part of the process. This book does not mean you should hang out on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial and try to find strangers and sit down and discuss really charged issues with them. It just means that you see as a part of your life an obligation to talk with people who are close to you. We can't make that stubborn uncle agree with you, but we can let that stubborn uncle know that you're a person who is willing to have any kind of discussion with him. Sarah and I were really moved recently when we had a conversation with Dr. David Camp. He runs an organization that provides tools for white people who want to be allies to communities of color. And he talks about how important it is for white people to talk with other white people about race, that this is the most effective conversation you can have if you want to be an ally to a community of color. Same thing, if you want to be an ally to the LGBTQ community and you're a straight person, you need to talk with other people about marriage equality and about how you feel about transgender issues. This is how we start to kind of rub off on each other. And it's not going to be one conversation. This is a big part of starting with yourself, knowing that you aren't, as Sarah always says, going to share like the one perfect long read that contains all kinds of data that will make someone suddenly abandon every position that they've held dear for a long time. Mm-hmm. It's a process. So you just want to commit to showing up for that process and that your goal isn't to persuade, it's to learn and grow and connect more with this other person so that you can positively influence one another over time.
Interesting. That's a good point. So that's starting with looking at ourselves. Then what do we consider when we look outward in part two?
Well, part two opens with the idea of giving grace. And again, we want to uphold the dignity of other people. Too much conversation right now exists in this sort of gotcha mode. We're even mean about each other's grammar online. You know, when people are arguing with us about politics, we just find every opportunity to personally denigrate someone who disagrees with us. And what we're asking is offer some grace. Understand that this person might have views that are abhorrent to you, and they still belong in this country, and they are still a fellow citizen and a person that we want to be in relationship with. It might be a very limited relationship, but we still share this space together. And then from there, we talk about really trying to exit your echo chamber, examine a lot of different kinds of news sources. You don't have to agree with any of them. You don't have to change a single thing about what you believe, but expose yourself to contradictory opinions. Expose yourself even to information that's not good information, so you know that it's out there. And so you can have conversations with loved ones about that information and about how we all need to be really vigilant about what we take in. And we just walk through the process that ends in kind of a rinse and repeat. You know, we want you to follow these steps, have these discussions, and then start over again. Because even where you really find your work to do politically, you find an issue that you really care about and you're willing to talk with just about anyone about, you can get very myopic very fast when you're politically engaged. So once you get kind of through the end of the process and you're having these conversations, you want to go right back into checking in with yourself. What are my motivations? how am I growing here instead of kind of constricting or hardening around a certain opinion?
Interesting. So you also write that you both quickly realized that you can't meaningfully discuss politics without getting clear on your values. And for you, that means incorporating your faith. Can you share more about that and how faith can be best represented in these kind of conversations?
Well, you know, politics is really just how we are going to live in community with each other. And when you boil it down to those basics, what you really believe about what kind of person you should be in the world has to come into play. And so for us, that comes from our faith backgrounds, but you could substitute, you know, virtue or ethics or any kind of value-based system for faith. You know, anybody, we want to invite everyone into this conversation with a diversity of things that inform those values. For us, you know, we think a lot about distinguishing between faith informing what we want the outcome of any particular policy to be, and more about informing the way that we exist in the political process. So it's not that my faith counsels that we need to get this law passed or we need to stop that law from passing. It's that my faith means I want to treat fellow human beings with kindness and respect. I want to consider the perspectives of my neighbors when I vote instead of voting only my own interest. So when we bring those values to our political participation, instead of focusing solely on what we think is the right law under our faith-based systems, we find that we're acting out our faith even more effectively when we apply it to yay or nay about a particular issue.
Right. Okay. So for somebody listening who might engage in political conversation today, I mean, definitely they need to read the book, but what is your top tip for having a better conversation today?
I think that most people today hear discussions about being civil or gracious in political conversation and kind of roll their eyes because whatever side you fall on, many of us feel that our country is in like an existential moment where things are too important and all bets are off. And what I would counsel is that we really recall that in-group, out-group phenomenon and commit for just a second to looking for the value in the people around us. And so when you go into a conversation, even about something that you feel is the most important issue, can you just go into interview mode with the person you're talking with? Why do you feel this way? Tell me about the experiences in your life that have influenced this opinion. And just listen and internalize what you hear. You will find that you'll be so much more connected to that person, even if you still think what they believe is gross and wrong and offensive. There will be something in there that leads to connection and something in there that helps you better advocate for what you think is the real important issue. So if we can just put down the weapons for a second and listen, and then think about how to pick them back up if that's the right thing to do, but use them more effectively.
I love that. And like you said, all toward the goal of politics is how we live in community with each other. So it's important that we listen to each other in order to do that.
Absolutely. The more we disconnect, we're just going to keep getting the same results, you know, and the things that are most important to us are not going to get done in a democratic society if we can't influence the people around us, which we just can't do if we tell them all the time that they're garbage and we're throwing them away.
Right. So where can we find and connect with you further online?
Oh, thank you for asking. You can find Pantsuit Politics anywhere you listen to podcasts. Our website is pantsuitpoliticsshow.com. And the book is I Think You're Wrong, But I'm Listening. And it's available anywhere that you purchase books. We hope that you will check both out. And Kristen, thank you so much for talking with me.
Thank you. I so appreciate your time today. And thanks for listening. Until next time, keep on doing good. We will talk soon.
Thanks for listening to the Do Gooders podcast. Find the show notes for this episode and all past episodes at caringmagazine.org/podcast. And if you love the show, would you share it with a friend? We'll see you next time, Do Gooder.